You're listening to Sipping on Some Crime podcast, hosted by Aaron. This podcast covers sensitive and triggering subjects, explicit language, and mature content which may not be suitable for children. As always, all parties are innocent until proven guilty.
Today, I will be covering the Bernadette Walker case. All right, guys, I'm going to let you know right away, starting with this case. There's not a lot of information out there. So getting this case out there and putting it together, I did the best I could with the information I had, but I knew it had to be put out there. So I'm going to start by letting you know that there is just not a lot of information on Bernadette herself. Usually at this point, I would tell you about who Bernadette was, is, activities she liked to do, how she was growing up as a child, her family dynamics and her backgrounds. But I just don't have that information. It's just so few and far in between that we get an actual glimpse into Bernadette herself. But the story must still be told. The fact is, this case hasn't garnered international attention, let alone any attention locally that it deserves, is absolutely maddening. And what I mean by that is, when it comes to Bernadette herself being covered in the limited coverage at all, it seems that she gets completely lost in the story. This coverage is so focused on her father and her mother, and while I understand the media is trying to piece together what happened to this beautiful young girl, and we have to speak about her mother and her father to understand it, it is so disheartening how little focus goes on to Bernadette herself. What I'm going to do from here is give you guys a breakdown of what's going on in this case and why it's important. For so many of us in this community, this case is going to feel eerily familiar. I know you guys will feel the connection to this case. I want to give Bernadette all the attention that I can give her in this moment. I want to find a way to raise her voice, and I hope you guys will help me with that mission. Bernadette Walker is a 17-year-old student from Century Square, Peterborough. Friends say that Bernadette was something of a goth. She was socially awkward and had many friendships online. She was known to dye her hair a rainbow of colors, and she wore glasses. Her father is Scott Walker, 51 at the time of her disappearance, and at the time was living with Sarah Walker, who was 38 years old at the time, Bernadette's mother. Now, Sarah does have Scott's last name, but she is not married to Scott. She changed her last name to Walker by what they call in the UK a deed poll. This intrigued me, and I wanted to learn more about what a deed poll was. It's a legal document that proves a change of name. You can change any part of your name and or remove any hyphens or just simply change the spelling of your name. There's two types of deed polls. There is an unenrolled and an enrolled. The unenrolled deed poll is the one that you make yourself, and an enrolled one is that you have to actually apply for. For an unenrolled change to basically be legal, you would have to ask the organization that you are dealing with, such as the bank or school, what they would require for them to use for that name to be changed officially on those documents. You can enroll for a deed poll by putting your name on a public record, and you must apply to the Royal Court of Justice to get an enrolled deed poll, and it costs around $43 euro. You have to be over the age of 18. But there are a few loopholes, and that's what I believe Sarah actually used for her deed poll, which is if you're married or in a civil partnership, you don't need a deed poll to take the spouse or civil partner's surname. You just need to send a copy of either your civil partner certificate or your marriage certificate to the record holders such as the Benefit Office, and your documents with your name will be completely updated for free. I just found that a little interesting and kind of wanted to explain because I knew it was really confusing and it's not a legal term we use over here, and would also explain how Sarah and Scott have the same last name. So to overview, Sarah Walker is Bernadette's mother, but she is not Scott's wife. And it's very important to note here that Scott is not Bernadette's biological father, like many articles have him listed. In fact, I haven't found many articles where they call him her stepfather. Only in a few does it notate that Scott is not her biological father. All this information becomes a big part later on in the case. It's also important to note here that Sarah Walker is no longer and was no longer in a relationship with Scott when all of this took place. And Sarah had begun dating someone new, but her and Scott still resided in the same home. So I'm sure you're with me already. So many red flags. Bernadette was last seen alive July 18th, 2020 in Petersboro at her grandparents' home, who were actually Scott's parents. Bernadette was spending the night there because on July 16th, Bernadette had decided that she would go to her mother and explain to her that her father had been sexually abusing her for over 7 years. Bernadette began this conversation by texting her mother about these incidents in which she had said Dad, as she called Scott, was sexually abusing her. And there is a record of these messages. One text message read, "Most of the time, it was in the game room when you were on night shifts." Another message she sent her mother that night was about knowing that her father had planted cameras in both her bedroom and her bathroom. Sarah's response to her daughter was that she did not believe her. In fact, she told Bernadette that she was confused and suggested that she was sleepwalking and warned her that if child services or police were to get involved, all the children would be taken out of the home by social services. In these text messages, Sarah goes on to defend Scott even more to Bernadette, saying she knows these accusations are not true because she wouldn't stay in the same home with him if it was. Bernadette then messages her mother back saying she knows she's not confused, she hasn't misunderstood anything, and she is not lying. On the following day, on the 17th, it was decided that Bernadette would go spend the night with her grandparents while things calmed down a little bit in the house. Julie Walker, Scott's father's wife, said that when Bernadette was dropped off at her house, she was very upset and crying. Bernadette had told Julie she just wanted her mom to believe her. Julie had asked Bernadette what were these allegations that she wanted her mom to believe. And Bernadette just told her, "I can't tell you because you're my grandparent." Julie said that throughout the visit, Bernadette just kept repeating that she wasn't lying. Eventually, Julie noticed that she wasn't going to get anything out of Bernadette, so they just changed the subject. Bernadette ended up falling asleep on their sofa, and when she got up in the morning, she didn't change her clothes. Scott then called his parents, letting him know that he would be over soon to pick Bernadette up. On the morning of July 18th, Scott would arrive at his parents' house to pick Bernadette up and bring her home. Julie said that while Scott was there, Bernadette was very quiet. Scott's parents said goodbye to Bernadette, and she got in the car with Scott to head back home. That same morning, Bernadette's phone and Scott's phone would be shut off between the hours of 11:23 a.m. and 12:54 p.m. Scott's phone would then switch back on at 12:54 p.m., in which he made a call to Sarah's cell that was 9 minutes long. I do not have the information on if and when Bernadette's phone was turned back on that day. We do know that Bernadette's phone is active at some point because articles state that in the next few days, Bernadette's mother, Sarah, would access Bernadette's social media accounts. There is a transcript that investigators were able to pull from one of these interactions where Sarah's mother actually reaches out to one of Bernadette's online friends after seeing a message from Bernadette to this friend stating that she was dealing with sexual abuse from her father. Sarah's mother messages this friend and says, "I'm Bernadette's mother and she's been lying to you. None of this has ever happened." The friend does defend Bernadette, saying they don't believe that Bernadette's lying. 3 days later, on July 21st, Sarah and Scott would call to report their daughter missing, telling the police that she had run away from home. When police and investigators would arrive to the Walkers' home on July 23rd as part of Bernadette's missing investigation, they stated that Scott was there and he became tearful, but not over the explanation or worries of Bernadette being missing, but instead it seemed to be that his main focus was on that Sarah was now in a different relationship with somebody else. Investigators were there to search Bernadette's room in hopes of finding clues as to where she ran away to, as her parents had stated. Bernadette's parents also show investigators text messages from Bernadette's phone saying she ran away and that she was sorry for the lies that she had told, etc. Investigators decide to sit Scott down and try to figure out exactly what happened between the 3 days of Bernadette going missing and why it took those 3 days to report her missing. Scott admits to being the last one to see her when he picked her up on the morning of the 18th. Scott goes on to tell investigators that after he picked up Bernadette from his parents' house, while they were driving in the car home, he confronted her about the accusations of sexual assault. Scott said that at that point, Bernadette became so upset, and when he stopped along their way home, Bernadette bolted from the car. Scott says he tried to chase after her, but he had no success to catching up to her. Investigators push Scott for a little more information. They ask him where he stopped that Bernadette ran from. Scott said she went down an alley. Scott drew them a map, but says he can't remember the exact location. He goes on to tell investigators that he just had so much on his mind that day that he can't remember any of those details. This, of course, sets off more alarm bells for investigators, and they decide to start digging deeper into this runaway case. When going through Bernadette's social media accounts, they see there are messages to family and friends stating after the 18th from Bernadette that she ran away. However, these messages weren't coming in a style that Bernadette would typically write or respond in. Investigators were able to see that these messages were coming from Bernadette's social media accounts not too long after the 9-minute phone call made from Scott's phone to Sarah's phone on the afternoon of the 18th. Not only do investigators discover these messages being sent out on Bernadette's social media accounts claiming that she ran away that don't seem to fit her style, but when they look back further into her messages, they do see messages from Bernadette reaching out to her online friends, talking about the sexual abuse from her father. Investigators now believe that Scott and Sarah formulated a plan to keep investigators looking the other direction by sending text messages and social media messages from Bernadette's phone that they do believe was in their possession. They also used it to send messages to friends stating that she had run away, in what they believe was an attempt to give themselves time to hide Bernadette's body. They also believe they used Bernadette's phone to send message to friends and family stating that she had run away to give themselves time to hide Bernadette's body and any evidence that would prove they murdered their own child. Investigators believe that the hour and a half that Bernadette and Scott's phones were shut off, that Scott had the time to kill and dispose of Bernadette's remains in the countryside. Investigators also fully believe that that 9-minute phone call Scott made to Sarah, he had told her that he had killed their daughter and that she needed to help him cover it up, and that she sprung into action helping him cover her own daughter's murder. It would be about 6 weeks after the initial call reporting Bernadette missing that both Sarah and Scott would be arrested and charged with perverting the course of justice. Prosecutors decided to pursue a no-body case. While prosecutors won't be able to say how Bernadette was murdered because they have yet to discover her remains, they still believe they have enough evidence to try this no-body case. However, the charges against Sarah are still only 2 counts of perverting the course of justice. The trial is ongoing right now, and the prosecution has some strong evidence. Presented to the court on July 18th of June 2021, the prosecution team presented evidence that Scott, Sarah, and Bernadette's phones were in the same location in the early hours of July 20th, 2020, in the Calbit area, And for an hour and 20 minutes, all three phones were turned off. They pointed out this gave Sarah and Scott the perfect amount of time to dispose of Bernadette's remains. Prosecution, using the GPS cell records, were able to tell jurors that in the early hours of July 20th, Sarah's phone would ping off of a tower, placing her and Scott's phone at a lockup garage, Montego Road, at 12:27 a.m. Also with the GPS, they were able to determine that they left that garage around 5 minutes later. Scott's vehicle, a silver Mercedes, is seen on a street camera at 12:37 a.m. traveling on the A16 northbound away from Petersburg. At 12:42 a.m., all three phones would connect to the Crowland Water Tower cell site. At 12:43 a.m., Sarah's phone would disconnect from the network. And a minute later, at 12:44 a.m., Scott's phone would disconnect as well. At 12:54 a.m., Bernadette's phone would connect to a number of cell phone towers in the Calbit area for about 35 minutes. And during this time, messages would begin to be sent from Bernadette's phone. This showed that the phone was moving. The first message sent from Bernadette's phone at this time would be sent to Sarah's phone, and the message would read, "For God's sakes, what the hell, Mum? Stop messaging my friends. I swear you tell anyone else I lied. I will tell them I don't have my phone. I'll tell everyone Dad has got it. I'm okay." Another message would be sent from Bernadette's phone to a friend saying, "You can leave me alone too." And another message would be sent to a friend that said, "Please leave me alone." That friend would respond to her message saying, "Bernadette, please go home." The record of these messages continue, but they are incoherent and lack context and make no sense. Bernadette's phone replies, "Everyone?" Her friend texts back, "I don't. Your mom doesn't." Bernadette's phone then replies, "You should." The friend's phone responds, "Well, I don't because I care about you." Bernadette's phone says, "I'm okay." The friend asks Bernadette who she's with, and gets the reply, "No." Like I said, these messages are not coherent, and they are back and forth. The text conversation between Bernadette's phone and the friend continues with no context. Her friend texts, "Okay, that's fine. Your mom loves you so much, and she really misses you." Bernadette's phone replies, "Stop messaging people about me. I'll throw my phone. Leave me alone." Her friend again replies, "I just want you to go home." Bernadette's phone then replies, "I know." Her friend replies, "You scared everyone." Bernadette's phone replies, "I don't care. Sorry, got to go. They don't know I actually have my phone." The last message from Bernadette's phone would be to this same friend at 1:28 a.m. saying, "I don't know what to do. Keeping my options open. K. Bye." Then at 1:29 a.m., Bernadette's phone is disconnected from the network for good. Her phone never reconnects to the network and is never recovered. I know those messages don't make sense for any of us. Even reading them as they are typed out in the transcript makes no sense, but I thought it was important for you to hear the messages going back and forth. Scott's car is then sighted on the A15 in Glinton at 1:49 a.m. There would be no sighting of the car, and none of the three phones would be connected to the network again until 3:03 a.m. when Sarah's phone reconnected to the network and GPS locates her phone by 3:07 a.m. at their home in Century Square. Scott's phone again connects to the network at 4:08 a.m. at home in Century Square. Where this stands right now, Scott is being charged with murder and three counts of perverting justice. He's pled not guilty. Like I said, this case doesn't have enough information out there, and it's frustrating. I understand that they are taking this case to trial, and so there isn't much that they can put out there. And I wouldn't want them to put out information that would jeopardize the case. However, I would like to understand how Sarah is only facing four counts of perverting justice. She has pled guilty to two of those charges and not guilty to the other two. For those of you like me that aren't super familiar with the UK judicial system, the definition of perverting justice is as follows. Perverting the course of justice of an offense committed when a person prevents justice from being served to him/herself or another party. In England and Wales, it is a common law offense carrying a maximum sentence of life imprisonment. This case is still in court, and we will have to continue to watch this case to see where it goes. I would like to see more news coverage on it, and more importantly, more information to come out about Bernadette, who she was, the things she enjoyed doing, and most importantly, making sure that her story is told. There are multiple articles on this case, and they all say something a little bit different. So I took the information from all of them and tried to understand them the best I could in the sequence of events that happened and where the case stands today. I wanted to put in a quick update that after I prepared my script for this episode, an update and the current news of the trial came out 3 days ago. In court 3 days ago, prosecutors did find on Sarah Walker's computer and her text messages that it seems she may not have believed that Scott had nothing to do with her daughter's disappearance. On July 24th, Sarah had sent a text message to her new significant other about Scott saying, "Not 100% convinced about his story." They would also find searches on Sarah's device on Google that were as followed: how to track a mobile phone, how to check on a mobile phone's location, and the last search being, "I think my partner knows where my missing child is." The article was very short, and it just went over some of the interesting things from the testimony 3 days ago that were presented about Sarah's activities in the days after her daughter's disappearance, and I definitely wanted to add that in. With so few articles focusing on the fact that Scott's not her biological father, it had me confused as to why they continue to refer to him as her father, not only in articles, but in court, and not her stepfather. It seems in my research that Bernadette always called him dad, and he had always been in that role since she can remember. I wish I knew more about when Scott came into Sarah and Bernadette's lives, why he was still living there after Sarah and him had split up, especially when she was dating someone else, and why they were never married after being together so long. I have so many questions, and I'm sure you do too. I encourage you to look up this case. Set a Google alert for it, because Bernadette's story is so important, and her case means so much to other children fighting to be heard in the same situation. So many times we see the guardians of these children use the term runaway because they know it comes with a bad connotation. They know it's going to make police and other people outside of this house look at this child like they're just a kid not getting their way, and that's why they ran away. It also gives them time to hide evidence and create stories, and we know this case after case. This young girl stepped up and asked for her mother's help, and she was called a liar and threatened instead of receiving the help that she needed. I hope justice is served for her, and I know I will be keeping a close eye on this case. Remember, when you see those missing and murder posts on social media, to like, share, retweet. Every time we share a face, we get closer to solving a case. Until next time.